This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
You know, normal, intelligent, reasonable people can conclude like, yeah, it may look like a political prosecution, but he really did break laws. So there you go.
The political antics of 2020 have been unlike anything most of us have ever seen. As we wrap up this year, we ask an old friend of Sea Change Radio to help us put a bow on it with an in-depth political analysis. This week on Sea Change Radio, the first in a two-part, free-flowing political conversation with journalist John Storr. We look at the final, exhausting days of the Trump administration and try to decipher signals from Joe Biden as to whether he may be planning to prosecute the current president. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by John Storr. He is the founder of the editorial board, and people can go subscribe before the holidays still at Storr, that's Storr.substack.com. John, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I've been kind of waiting until the holiday season to talk about next year with you because we talked a lot about the upcoming election for the last year, and now that's in our rearview mirror except for Georgia, which we can dig into a little bit. But I want to talk about what we're seeing right now post-election politically. And first, let's use your post that you wrote on December 14th on your Substack, entitled, Are Dems Taking Their Own Side in a Fight? So you're encouraged by Dems, quote-unquote, fighting back. How are they framing it effectively in your eyes?
Right. So here's the context. First of all, the Democrats for a long time used to run away from the word partisan. They run away from the word politics, even. They would instead turn to issues that seem to be neutral, like economics or business or other issues that would resonate with a broad swath of the population. But Donald Trump, like he has for a lot of things, has changed the way I think Democrats talk about not only politics, but themselves as a political party. When you have a president who will not admit defeat, and in fact, it goes to extraordinary lengths to try to discredit and delegitimize the rightful winner of the election, that is Joe Biden. That's going to change the way the opposition talks about itself and its opposing party, the Republicans. So what I saw in this piece is that Democrats using language that I just have never seen them use before. For instance, Chris Murphy, who's my senator here in Connecticut, He was describing what the Republicans had done when the whole bunch of them signed on to a Supreme Court lawsuit to overturn the election. He said the following, "The most serious attempt to overthrow our democracy in the history of this country is underway. Those who are pushing to make President Trump president for a second term, no matter the outcome of the election, are engaged in a treachery against their nation." I find that just amazing. And he said this on the Senate floor. Treachery, right? At the editorial board, I've been really discussing a lot the idea of treason or betrayal, disloyalty, disunion, sabotage. These are political acts done to hurt the greater good in order to benefit the Republican Party. And for a long time, the Democrats would not touch the word treachery, not at all. They would just run away from that. But reality on the ground, facts on the ground, tend to change things. And now we see a Democratic Party that seems to be willing to do that. And I don't think it's doing it, by the way, if anybody is pushing back, I don't think they're doing it just for political reasons. They're doing it for the right reasons, but they also happen to be political reasons too.
And before Trump was impeached, you and I had a lengthy conversation or two about how we thought this would be an important step in the right direction. I think one could argue that this kind of language becoming more standard, Murphy's type of language on the floor, could be a little bit of a byproduct of going through that process of impeachment. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's totally fair, though it's very hard to see for most people. But I do think there's a direct line between his impeachment and his loss. What most people don't understand, most people do understand is that he was impeached for abuse of power, right? His abuse of power was involving a foreign leader in a conspiracy to defraud the American people. Specifically, he was trying to get the president of Ukraine to help him dig up dirt on Joe Biden in order to sabotage Joe Biden's candidacy, which at the time was in its infancy. What are we really talking about when we say that, all that? We're talking about treason. That's what that is. Treason is mostly understood in a context of war, but I do not see why we all of us have to be chained to that definition.
Yes, I mean, we could also say treasonous, right? And then it still rings true.
Right, treasonable, let's say that. Right.
Sure.
Treasonable acts. However you want to parse it, it's a material betrayal of the country. Like the quid pro quo between that Trump was asking for was a trading America for something that would only benefit him. Right. That's treason. And most people did not see that, I think, partly because the Democrats didn't frame it that way. Then they had their own reasons, good and bad, for doing that. But there's a direct line that, you know, most people, by the time we got to the moment in which citizens could express their will, meaning election day, you know, most people, 40 or 84 million people were like, no, this guy's got to go. He does not betray us. We should also keep in mind too, like, how extraordinary it is for an incumbent to lose. Like, it almost never happens. It hasn't happened. It has happened once in my life, in our lifetimes, right?
Yeah, I mean, George W. Bush was subjectively an awful president, and somehow was reelected. I mean, that tells you all you need to know about how easy it is to get reelected as an incumbent.
Right, right. Well, I should say I was born in 74, so technically it was twice in my lifetime with Carter and then George H.W. Bush. But, you know, that doesn't happen. Usually an incumbent wins, even if it's by a razor-thin margin. And Biden knocked him off. It just takes an extraordinary shift in the electorate, you know, for that to happen. I think, actually, George H.W. Bush's example is a anomaly because of Ross Perot, and he was the spoiler.
He could also be considered a third term of Reagan. Like, if Hillary had won in 2016, I think her reelection would have been more challenging, irrespective of how effective a president she would have been.
I think the whole idea, and also, you know, spinning off of treason here, that the whole idea of patriotism has changed quite a bit, I think, especially among Democrats. If you just have a discussion about patriotism, they're like, oh, that's what the Republicans talk about. They're always hugging the flag and, you know, saying love it or leave it. We don't want to be like the Republicans. But again, Donald Trump changed that, right? I mean, there was the Republican National Convention of 2016 with a whole bunch of people waving the Russian flag. That was a turning point, I think, for a lot of Americans, but specifically Democrats in their consciousness.
That kind of brings me to my next question, because we were talking about Ukraine and the treasonable acts of Trump. Doesn't seem too far-fetched after what we've seen over the last month here.
Yes.
In terms of the election. It seems like that would be small potatoes is asking the Ukraine to step in at this point, since he's pulling out any possible stop, from martial law to just throwing lots of crap at the wall to see what sticks legally, and just a desperate, desperate man doing desperate things regardless of their legality. There's just a lot of political Hail Mary passes being thrown out there.
Mm-hmm.
So now the idea of secession has been even broached by Republican leaders around the country. You know, the Attorney General of Texas. People who are trying to curry Trump's favor are thinking, mm-hmm. well, you know, love it or leave it. Maybe that works both ways. Maybe we should leave it.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, the one thing I want your listeners to hear is this. It's tempting to say, yeah, go ahead, go, leave, right? It's tempting for Democrats and liberals and that side of things to say, yeah, we don't want you anyway. And I totally sympathize with that, right?
Yeah, we both come from blue states, but, you know, and there's been talk of, you know, California having its own country because it's a big enough economy to be on its own. But
right.
The reality would be quite bleak.
It would be extremely bleak. And remember that the forces that would lead to conservative states seceding would not stop with secession. Remember that the Confederacy of America, the Confederate States of America, did not stop with secession. They started with secession and then invaded. That's what the Civil War. The South invaded the North in order to dismantle the government of the United States and turn it into a slaveocracy. I mean, that was that was where it was going. We tend to forget that part. We tend to think, oh, they just seceded and that was it. No, they invaded and they were going to change everything for the worse. And, you know, I'm not saying anybody's going to turn anything to a slaveocracy, but, you know, secession is not the end. It's definitely the beginning. Even if it feels good to say, yeah, go ahead and leave.
Bells will be ringing the glad, glad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone, I have no friends to wish me greetings once again. Choirs will be singing silent nights, Christmas carols by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas, come home for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's night.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to the founder of the editorial board, John Storr. So, John, we spoke about Ukraine, but there's been some new news on the Russia front. Why don't you catch our listeners up on that through your lens?
Sure. Well, in brief, the Russian intelligence agencies have been conducting an operation that started in October of 2019 to hack into computer networks in the federal government, and also, and this is the important part, in the federal government's supply chain, which is vast. So the impact is not only on the federal government, but on dozens, if not hundreds, of private sector companies who rely on security measures. So the quote that I came up with from the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that agency said that the hack poses a grave risk to the federal government and state, local, tribal, and territorial governments, as well as critical infrastructure entities and other private sector organizations. Another expert, an independent expert, called it the most consequential cyber espionage campaign in history, and the fact that the government is absent is a huge problem. The government being absent would be that the president, the current president, had said nothing for at least a week in response to this news, and then when he did say something, it was pretty much what you'd always expect from Donald Trump, and that was that Russia didn't have anything to do with this. It was probably China, and the hack probably had nothing to do with the government networks. It probably had to do with voting machines, all of which is a lie. I want your listeners to understand that part. All of that is a lie.
Yes. Let me read what he tweeted. Quote, "The cyber hack is far greater in the fake news media than in actuality. He said the press corps exaggerated the damage and the real issue was whether the election results had been compromised. There could also have been a hit on our ridiculous voting machines during the election. So he flipped it around as to him being the victim in this.
He always does that, right? He flips it around. He becomes the victim instead of the co-conspirator in a possible co-conspirator in a crime. So that's the news, right? And to my knowledge, one Republican has spoken up. And that one Republican, you can probably guess, is Mitt Romney.
Yeah, Mitt Romney, who just...
who turned out to be right, right? Mm-hmm.
He was not a dumb man. And that was why I feared him in 2012 to possibly beat Obama. But he, you know, being a smart person and being an effective politician are two different things, as we see in the human form known as a Mitt Romney, where he just becomes the definition of feckless. And, you know, he's the new Jeff Flake, where he's writing concerned yeah. tweets, but he's never going to flip and become the Democratic senator from Utah.
No, I mean, that would be suicide, right? I mean, I can't imagine that being the case.
I mean, he's pretty old. I mean, he's already very wealthy. If he doesn't want to get reelected in Utah, and he actually is a man of principle, the principles that he's espousing are not being set forward by his party.
Yes, I think that's true. But I think what we forget to say is that parties are very elastic and flexible. Remember, the Democratic Party was like half Southern segregationists and half Northern liberals for ages. And that was a coalition that held, you know, for a few decades. And I could see Romney, just we're going on a tangent here, but I could see Romney as forging a truly conservative wing of the Republican Party, you know, kind of a George Romney revival, like his father, who was a terrific governor of Michigan, or a Nelson Rockefeller type who basically built the higher education infrastructure of New York State.
Or Lincoln Chafee in Rhode Island.
Yeah, Lincoln Chafee in Rhode Island. I mean, there's still room for that kind of political thought. It just needs to be carved out from the inside.
It's just been sucked up not only by Trump, but also by 40 years of lies about trickle-down economics and endless yes. tax cuts.
Yeah, yeah. I could see a Romney type going forward and saying, we need to rebuild civil society. You know, that rings true for conservatives and it rings true for liberals. And that would be, you know, just go that way. Anyway, he's the only one. Meanwhile, the Democrats are not only in unison about... this cyber attack, the cyber sabotage, but some of them are actually using the word war, which I find to be interesting, perhaps frightening. But using that word has political utility because it puts the Republicans, who are, you know, ever since 9/11 have been like the war party, right? It puts them in a position to choose. You know, are you for America or for the Russians, right? I don't know if the Democrats can ever turn up the volume such where the Republicans would actually be forced to make that choice. But the shift in rhetoric, just like the shift in rhetoric about patriotism, is very much worth noting.
It sure is. I mean, you were mentioning how that was maybe a turning point from a messaging standpoint for some Republicans when they saw Russian flags being flown proudly in 2016 at the Republican convention.
Yeah, and also deepened by the impeachment acquittal. Senate Democrats really did not, some of them, really did not think that the Senate Republicans would acquit Trump. I mean, the evidence against him was enormous, right? Quid pro quo. It was clearly the case that he abused his power, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you can impeach and try to prosecute a guy who lied to a grand jury about his sexual relations with a White House employee, then you would surely think that involving a foreign leader in a ploy to defraud the American people would also rise to that level. And a lot of Democratic senators thought surely he was going to go, but no, and they were stunned, you know? They were like, holy cow, we thought we understood who these people were. We thought these were people of principle, but it turns out no.
wobble, then wobble, wobble the hen. Hey, hey, hey. Christmas I come, mama say no money no flow. Hey, hey, Christmas I come, me mama say no money no flow. Hey, one pan fi have si patchy. Hey, what a woman can sew. Hey, me take me shot and cover it. Hey, no one really know. Hey, hey, bing bing send a coin.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to the founder of the editorial board, John Storr. So, moving forward with Russia and the criminality that we've seen over the last 4 years and the sheepish approach to Trump from his Republican colleagues, how do we move forward starting January 21st, 2021? Joe Biden's been asked several times in many different ways whether or not he's going to be open to prosecuting the current administration, and I think his rhetoric has shifted a little bit since he's been elected. Just if maybe I'm trying to read between the lines a little too much.
Well, two things. One is that when he campaigns in Georgia, he says that we got to get these two seats or I'll never get anything through the Congress. So that tells me that he doesn't think Republicans are going to work with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true.
Right, and two, that I don't think he would allow past assertions about his opinions about the Republican Party to tie his hands about what he has to do with respect to the Republican Party in the future. Right, he will just shift. I mean, he will say, well, a DOJ investigation has revealed this information. I got nothing to do with it, but it's going to be handled by career prosecutors who are politically neutral. I say follow the facts wherever they may lead, and so on and so forth. What's probably going to happen, however, is that the DOJ, meaning the FBI, will probably help state investigators as much as they can without putting their fingerprints all over it, so that it looks like, so the appearance is that there are state prosecutors who are uncovering crimes, gathering evidence, and building cases against Trump. And in particular, I'm talking about his taxes. You know, it's kind of like the Al Capone strategy. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't nail anything else against him, but you can nail him on his taxes. And given who this guy is, right, nobody knows because we've never seen his tax returns, but all of us know at the same time that there's just no possible way on this God's green earth that this man has an honest tax return.
Right.
Right. There are crimes buried within crimes. There must be. And it's just a matter of time for them to come to light. So I think that's probably where it's going to go. You know, and as I said, with assistance from the FBI and other federal agencies. But Biden, or especially his attorney general, will probably shield Biden in any, in terms of appearance, right? He'll be like, this has nothing to do with Biden and stuff. But behind the scenes, you know, Biden will be like, well, the other thing too, I should say, is that Biden doesn't have, it will be seen as a political prosecution, whatever this thing turns out to be, automatically, because Trump's defenders will call it that, right? And even if you're not a Trump defender, you may, as an impartial observer, see it as a political prosecution because of the fact that somebody's going to seek out Trump's prosecution. But the fact is, if the crimes are there, if the evidence is there, then you prosecute the law, right? I mean, there it is. So, you know, normal, intelligent, reasonable people can conclude, like, yeah, it may look like a political prosecution, but he really did break laws. So there you go.
And then he's also been in the pardoning blitz that's being rumored to be occurring right now, where he just wants to have these proactive blanket pardons of everyone who's within a stone's throw of him. So how does that work? It doesn't look like the president can actually pardon himself for crimes that he hasn't been prosecuted for yet,
right,
federally. But I hear that it's really going to come down to, like, New York and the non-federal cases that are being right. levied against him. Can you kind of shed some light on the difference between the state and the federal prosecution paths?
Right. All presidential pardons are applicable to federal law, period. Not state law, not local law, not the law here in New Haven, not the law in, you know, Delavan, New York, where I grew up. You know, just it's not applicable to any of those laws. So if he's prosecuted of state crimes in New York City, his pardon has nothing to do with that. The other part about pardons is that the Constitution says the president can grant, it used the word grant pardons, and the word grant means from one to another, right? It doesn't say to himself, right? So there's language within the Constitution itself that seems that can be interpreted in any way as to prohibit a self-pardon. With respect to pardoning of future crimes, that's what President Gerald Ford did for Richard Nixon. And it seems like, how can you pardon a crime that has not been shown to have been committed? Or for future crimes, how's that even possible? Well, nobody knows, because nobody ever challenged Gerald Ford's pardon in court. I would imagine that if Trump pardoned himself, and nobody can stop him from doing the act of pardoning himself, that would draw an immediate challenge in court, and then the Supreme Court would have to rule. It would have to say either yes, he can do that, or no, he can't do that. Given the Supreme Court's current makeup of would-be originalists, I can't imagine that they would say it's okay for a president to pardon himself, because that would mean a president is king, and we just don't have that in this country, at least not, you know, formally. But the point is that none of that has been challenged, and I can imagine a self-pardon drawing an immediate challenge from no less than Joe Biden's Department of Justice. You know, they would have to do it. They'd have to challenge that, right? And in challenging it, it would kind of like give Joe Biden's Department of Justice a lot of political cover. Be like, hey, we didn't want to challenge this in court, but the guy forced us to. So here we are. We're, you know, defending the Constitution.
How would a prosecution work against a president from a state?
It would just be like you prosecuting you and me. The pardon will have nothing to do with it. The only person who can pardon a state crime is a governor.
If he avoids going back to New York, could he not be arrested?
No, criminals are extradited from state to state all the time. As long as he doesn't leave the country, you won't have a problem. But then there's another problem. Is this president, as a former president, a flight risk? And I kind of think there's a plausible argument there. Definitely
sure.
A flight.
Definitely.
Flight risk, for sure.
It could get pretty juicy. Could get pretty interesting. Please tune in next week for the second part of our two-part discussion.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Booker T and the MGs, Charles Brown, and Ika Mouse. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.